Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, who joins us weekly. The films are Sorry to Bother You, Leave No Trace. It's too easy. Hi, David. How are you?
Okay, Jill. Yeah, that sounds like a little mini story in itself, doesn't it?
No, it sounds like me trying to tell people to like clean up after themselves.
Well, I try. Anyway, yeah, these movies have very little in common with each other, except that I guess each one has a slightly unusual title. So let us begin by talking about Sorry to Bother You, which is written and directed by Boots Riley. Now, Boots Riley is a fairly newcomer to the world of movies. This is certainly his first feature film as writer-director, and he is best known as a rapper. And he is very much a part of today's popular culture scene, pretty well known and all of that. And now he has made a pretty ambitious entry into the movie world. And Sorry to Bother You, as the title probably sort of suggests, is a sort of a satirical comedy. And it centers on a main character whose name is Cassius Green. Now, his nickname is, since his first name is Cassius, is Cash. And his last name is Green. So he's like Cash Green, Green Cash. This is very much a movie about money and about a satire about money and the part that money plays in American life today, particularly as seen from an African-American perspective, which is very much Boots Riley's perspective. So our main character, Cassius Green, really, really needs a job. And at the very beginning of the film, we find him applying for a job at a call center. And the guy who's interviewing, the white guy who's interviewing, asks him questions and gives him a sort of a hard time. And we get the impression that poor Cash is just not the sort of obviously responsible fellow who's going to get a job. But then he gets a job because, as the guy who runs the call center says quite candidly, yeah, we'll hire anybody. So that's just what Cassius Green needed to hear. So he goes to work for this call center, and their big motto, which you hear over and over again, is stick to the script. He's just supposed to look at his screen and say things to the people he calls and persuade them to buy this product. Now, the big major kind of other element of this movie is a company. It appears to be and turns out to be very definitely a sinister company, which what it does is you sign a contract with them and it removes all the worry from your life forever and ever. You will always have an income. You will always have a job. You will always have a place to live. You will always have food. You will always have everything you need as long as you sign this contract. However, that's the thing. You have to sign this contract. And there are people who are protesting this company very vigorously, claiming that it's just kind of a new form of slavery. Once you get involved with this outfit, you are going to be in their clutches, and you'll never get out, and you have to work the way they tell you to work, and you have to eat what they tell you to eat, and all of this. So this is a thing that our hero, Cassius Green, is selling over the phone at the call center. So you have these two sort of different elements. You have the sinister company, and you have Cassius Green, who is working at the call center, and these two parts of the story come more and more together as we go along. So clearly, this is a pretty savage satire of sort of standard American way of life. It reminded me, and also very much, again, with a whole lot of racial perspective here, it's also very much a commentary on American racism. And the movie reminded me, in some respects, of Spike Lee's movie Bamboozled, which is also about, it's about an African-American man who is sort of upwardly mobile and goes to work for a media company, and all kinds of things happen. And Bamboozled is one of Spike Lee's problematic films. It's certainly not one of his worst films, but it is far from one of his best, because the satire just gets broader and more intense and more outrageous as the movie goes along. That doesn't exactly happen in Sorry to Bother You, which actually goes off down another tack after a while. I've mentioned our main character, Cassius Green, and his work at the call center, and we also have other little subplots woven in. He lives, for example, with his uncle in a house owned by his uncle, who desperately needs money to pay the rent, which is one of the reasons why Cash needs this job so badly. That's also in there. But eventually, and then the sinister company, eventually this becomes a sort of a, well, I will call it a fantasy film, but you could even call it a horror film, because eventually it turns out that one of the things that's going on in the background of all this is an evil plot to breed, well, to use chemicals to turn people into sort of half person, half horse. Not like centaurs, but more like regular human beings with horses' heads, who will be able to be sort of unthinking laborers. It's yet another step in the movie's satire of the idea of a modern day sort of slavery and turning people into tools of industry and tools of capitalism and so forth. So this then becomes the focus of the last part of the movie. It turns into a sort of a horror movie where we have these creatures which are part human, part horse, and at first we're totally mystified by what they are. Cassius Green comes upon them, and he has no idea what's going on, and that becomes a big focus of the last part of the movie, by which time, by the way, Cassius Green has been promoted and has become what's called a power caller, calling from the upstairs room at the call center where almost everybody is white. So when Sorry to Bother You turns into sort of a fantasy horror movie, it reminded me of various other films. It reminded me of The Cleanse, which is a recent independent movie. It reminded me a little bit of last year's big hit, The Shape of Water. And it very much reminded me of the recent very, very big movie, Get Out, which is another African-American satire of American life that turns into a sort of horror movie also, although in very different ways. So Sorry to Bother You is various things. It's a satire of American capitalism, of American business, particularly from the perspective of a young black man, and then it turns into a sort of a horror movie, which makes its message all the more kind of pungent and in a way, I already used the word outrageous, and I'll use it again, because the movie definitely wants to be outrageous. In all, it didn't please me very much. Sorry to Bother You bothered me. Hate to say that obvious thing, but, you know, we do what we can here on Films in Focus. It kind of bothered me. It's kind of like a very unsuccessful Spike Lee movie in a lot of ways. Now, I am kind of on the negative. I'm on the minority report end here, because Sorry to Bother You has been getting really, really excellent reviews from a very, very large number of critics. I found it just over obvious. I'll give one example of the sort of thing that bothered me. There's this thing when Cash first gets his job at the call center, and he is advised by the way, Danny Glover, a very fine actor, has a very small part in the movie, and he is another caller at the call center, and he advises Cash to use a white voice. And so Cash's Green starts using this voice, which sounds kind of like this. And, you know, it doesn't even sound like the actor's own voice. It sounds like it's dubbed in afterwards, and it becomes a sort of a steady thing in the movie, is these black people using what they think of as white voices. And I just didn't find it funny. Years ago, Richard Pryor used to do a hilarious impression of the sort of standard white voice. And believe me, this gets nowhere near that level. So I found Sorry to Bother You too obvious, too broad, overall not very funny. But again, a lot of people are loving it a lot, and it does have some interesting performances by Lakeith Stanfield as Cash and Tessa Thompson as his girlfriend Detroit, etc. So it has its good points. It just didn't please me very much. But hey, again, I'm giving a minority report here. Our other movie today, Leave No Trace, has also gotten, well, it's gotten truly ecstatic reviews. There's almost nobody anywhere who has a negative thing to say about Leave No Trace. I found it quite a successful film in a lot of ways, although once again, I was certainly a lot less thrilled than a lot of my fellow critics have been. Leave No Trace is directed by and co-written by Deborah Granik. Now, she is best known in the movie world for a film that came out about 8 years ago. This is her first real, you know, narrative feature film since then. Back in 2010, she made a movie called Winter's Bone, a very, very fine movie. And as that title suggests, Winter's Bone, it's a very dark movie in a lot of ways. Well, now she has made this film called Leave No Trace, which once again is very much a rural film, takes place outside the big city almost entirely. But in this case, it's the opposite of a dark movie. It's a serious movie. It has a serious dramatic story, but it's really a very optimistic film in a whole long list of ways, which I find an interesting contrast with her first film. So, Leave No Trace is the story of a young woman. She's played, by the way, by Thomasin Harcourt McKenzie, and the character's name is Tom. And she appears to be going on her middle teens. She's about 13 or 14 years old, apparently, even though the actress herself is 18 years old. And her father, the other main character of the movie, is played by Ben Foster. So we have this girl who is, again, sort of in her early teens, going maybe into her middle teens, and her father, who is a war veteran, probably the Iraq War, maybe Afghanistan too, and he obviously has PTSD. We see him waking up with nightmares at night and that sort of thing. But they have been living completely off the grid in a park either in or near Portland, Oregon. So there they are. They've been living completely off the grid. They build their own fires. They cook their own food. They live in a tent and all of this kind of stuff. And they've been doing this for a very long time. At one point, they travel into the city. The father goes to a VA hospital and apparently picks up medications, which he then apparently sells to some other people who live in this park. So that's apparently how they get some of their money. And they go to a regular supermarket and they buy food and all of that. And then they're back living in the woods, again, off the grid almost all the time, almost entirely. But then something happens, they get caught. They get caught by the authorities. And it turns out, and you know, this is not too surprising, it's illegal to actually live as your permanent residence in a public park. And so they are removed. We think for a while they may be in real trouble. Maybe the father's going to be thrown in jail because of his drug dealing. But nobody seems very aware of that. And even in the movie itself, even for us, the spectators, it's kind of ambiguous. What really happens is that the authorities really want to help them. They say, well, the main thing is that you're not allowed to live in a park. And also Tom, the girl, has to be in school. So they set them up with what they hope is going to be the best possible compromise with this unusual father and daughter. They're going to live in a house which is sort of like an ordinary little suburban house, but it's very isolated. It's sort of out in the middle of nowhere. And it's on a farm that raises and processes Christmas trees. So the father will work there. He'll work in the Christmas tree factory, so to speak. They're out in the woods, and they'll live in this house, and the girl will go to school. So it seems like a fairly reasonable compromise, but it's still too confining, too conventional for the father. And one day he just tells Tom, get your stuff, and they sneak off, and they go back out into the woods again. But then they decide they better get away from that area, or they're just sort of going to get hauled in again. So they get on a bus, and they make a long, long trip, and eventually we come to the end of the movie, which I certainly will not give away. Now, it's an involving story. It's an interesting story. It is very, very well acted by Foster and McKenzie. A very good movie. The thing that bothered me about Leave No Trace, and I repeat, this movie has been getting ecstatic reviews from almost everybody, but it struck me as too upbeat, too optimistic. Every single person who our two main characters run into really, really wants to be very, very helpful and really, really is as helpful as they can possibly be. I kept thinking of the famous line from Tennessee Williams' classic play, A Streetcar Named Desire, where Blanche DuBois says, I've always relied on the comfort of strangers. These two are constantly running into people, whether they are actual strangers or whether they are the authorities, who really want to help them and really do help them. Even when they're hitchhiking at one point during that later part of the movie, when they're getting away from Portland, Oregon, and they're going a long distance, even the people who can't pick them up in their trucks, give them a ride, are apologetic and explain why the company won't let me take the liability. And when a guy finally does agree to give them a ride, he asks them questions to make sure that they're not having some sort of illicit relationship and that they really are the innocent father-daughter they appear to be. The authorities are really, really helpful and kind and nice and adorable. It's all very sweet. The thing is, this is not the world I live in. In my world, there are people who are not nice. There are people who are not trying to help you. There are people who want to exploit you. Now, there are also very, very nice people. I wish that the film Leave No Trace had more of a realistic mix of different kinds of characters. Eventually, our two main characters end up living with a sort of colony of people out in the woods, and they're all nice and they're all lovely. And when somebody gets injured, it turns out that there's somebody who used to be a medic in the military who's right there, who knows exactly how to take care of the situation. Everybody is helpful. Everybody is nice. I suppose this is refreshing in our current media world, which contains so much negativity. But I just found this movie a little too good-hearted for its own good. So I have mixed reviews of both of these movies. Of the two of them, I really did prefer Leave No Trace. It's a really good picture. I just found it a little bit too... The glasses it was looking through were rose-colored from start to finish. So that is my somewhat skeptical story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Sorry to Bother You, and Leave No Trace.